Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It's going to be a great day to get to your locally owned garden center and get ready. Spring will be here in no time.
Oh, it will be.
Yes, it will.
It will. Just like I was telling you this morning, instead of a 52-week year, the way the weeks just fly by,
yeah,
it's like 52 days in a year.
Blink, blink.
Blink, blink, blink.
Yeah, the older you get, the quicker they go, too.
I'm telling you, in grade school, watching that old clock, at 9th District School, watching that little clock without the hour or without the second hand was brutal.
I think the clock is slow, to quote a Van Halen tune.
It was slow.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
You know, I mentioned earlier, because we were talking about what to do gardening-wise during these winter months. And I got a text this morning from our youngest, Adam, who had a question for you about how difficult is it, or what do you do if you're going to try to plant American chestnut from seed?
Ooh, that's an interesting thing there. Unfortunately, the American chestnut has not fared well.
Yeah.
There was a blight that swept through the American chestnut and devastated that species.
Wow.
So what you're more than likely to see available at your local garden centers and nurseries are the it's the Chinese chestnut, which is a lovely tree. It's a beautiful tree, great specimen, and that is as best as it gets, really, for the most part. But going back to the seed element of it, it needs to go through a cooling period, a vernalization, and that's extremely important. And that can be done in a number of ways. A lot of times, people will take that seed and put it in a container, keep it in the garage. Okay. You could also plant it. Most people like to plant it in the spring because they risk something maybe perhaps digging them up in the fall, like squirrels or other types of rodents or chipmunks. So it varies. But most importantly, it's got to go through a cooling period. Some people will do that in the refrigerator and use some sort of maybe a plastic container with holes in it, a bag, maybe some sort of a sand medium, or maybe some just ever so slightly damp peat moss, and then bring it out in the spring and go ahead and pot it up and get her going.
Sure.
So
get her going.
Get her going, you know. So, and, you know, if it hasn't sprouted or tried to sprout while you're storing it, you know, in a refrigerator, it's perfect. You know, you're not really at freezing and you're just above. So that's an ideal range. If not, you know, plant the flat side of that seed down and go for it. So
again,
most important thing is how you store it and going through a cooling period.
I'll share that information.
Share that with him, by all means. Yep. Share that with him, Ernie. And anyhow, you know, I was thinking about, this is the time of year that when you get out to your local garden centers and nurseries, you're getting the opportunity to see what's new, what's coming in, and just, you know, it's one of those things you get to salivate and just it makes you hungry, makes you antsy, anticipating the upcoming spring season, getting ready for various things. And one of those things is if you like to sow seeds indoors, that's what you can really do now. That's one of those winter projects. So first and foremost, I want to encourage most people who, in fact, start seed indoors to conduct a little seed inventory. A lot of times, you know, our seed packets are from last year, 2017. I know some of us might have some seed packets from 2014, okay? So we just need to do a little seed inventory assessment, so to speak. So if you have some seed on hand that have perhaps expired, you know, it's a date that's on the packet. Every packet has a date. Take a look at that. And if you want to check out the viability of that seed, it is a really, really simple earning kind of process that you can do. I always just tell people to, you know, grab, you know, get 10 seeds out of that packet.
10 of them?
10.
Okay.
Okay. You can get however many. You can do 5 if you want, you know. 10.
10's a good number.
Yeah, 10's a good number. It reminds me of a story I got to tell you about number 10.
Okay.
Okay, remember that because you'll appreciate this. Tina gets on me all the time. Number 10. You know, take like 10 seeds, place those seeds perhaps on a damp sponge, a wet, damp paper towel. cover it with plastic or a glass like cloche or some type of item. And after, you know, place it somewhere warm. And after several days, you know, see how many of those seeds have germinated.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to start with 10. And if 3 seeds out of the 10 have germinated, then I know that I have a 30% germination ratio. Or a 6 out of 10, it's 60%. So it kind of gives you a little bit of an insight, what's the viability of what you have.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not good, chuck it. Throw it out. Seed packets are very, very inexpensive.
Yeah.
So,
right.
You know, you're looking at around $1.99 to $2.99 for a packet of seeds. And that is a small price to pay in relation to what you can harvest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, just a packet of tomato seeds can harvest a lot of tomatoes very cheaply.
Yeah.
Buy some of those tomatoes at the farmer's market. They're about, what, $6 for like a, I don't know if you
a
call
it. A small
that.
Basket.
Yes. What do you call that? A peck or a quart? I don't know. Various sizes. But, you know, do that seed inventory. That's the first thing that you need to do.
And keep that in your journal.
Yes. Keep that in. And that's part of this, too. So if that seed's viable, it's still, you know, try and use it up. It's well worth still saving for the most part. But just take an assessment of what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you've done that, here's the next thing I like to see you do. Label those items. You know, nothing worse than you look at something and it's like,
what is that?
What is that? When did I do that?
Do it before you cut it down.
And this goes along with everything when it comes to gardening. I always, I will help customers in the garden center. I will label their products that they buy off the shelf with a date.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just so you have an idea of what you're working with and how long that you've had those items. So it's really important to label things. Label your tank sprayers.
Sure.
You know, that's important too. Fungicide, insecticide, you know, herbicides. So label things. That makes it a lot simpler easier to identify what you're working with. You know, another good project that we talk about this all the time too is to clean and prep
your tools.
Yes. Yes. Give me a round of applause there. Good job, Ernie. Yeah.
A smattering of applause.
Hey, nothing worse than going down to the shed or into the garage and you pull a shovel off the, you know, off the hook and it's caked with dirt.
Out from under the pile of everything else you've thrown in the shed.
Oh, that to me, that is like a guy wearing a suit with dirty dress shoes. You know, shoes that need to be shined. You got to have nice looking tools.
My favorite is when Lisa will say, "Hey, do we have one of these?" "Yeah, we do. Somewhere in that shed." "All right, never mind."
You know, and I'm bringing this up, and I say this all the time. A fool with a tool is still a fool.
Oh,
I say that always, you know, jokingly. But having the proper tools functioning correctly in the way they're supposed to makes gardening easier and more enjoyable too. That's important as well. Not everyone had the opportunity back in the fall when we were saying, "Hey, you know, get your lawnmower serviced, you know, get your tools sharpened, you know, take care of all those various things." So, cleaning your tools is of the essence. It's a great winter project to do. And don't try and tackle if you have several tools or 10 or 15 or whatever. Don't try and do it all in one day if you don't want to.
Just,
you know, go at it at your leisure. And come springtime, you'll be ready.
749 B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause here for a moment when we come back.
And while we're talking about these gardening projects and cleaning your tools, we have a few tips for cleaning those tools when we come back.
Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Little Rolling Stones under my thumb. And if you got a green thumb or a black thumb or a purple thumb, we are here to help you.
Just don't suck that
thumb. That's right.
Right.
That's right.
You know, we're talking about cleaning our tools and getting those all set up and ready to go for the spring season. Here are a couple of tips to make that process easier. I think every guy that has a workbench has to have a wire wheel.
Oh, it's mandatory.
Oh, big time. Do you have one?
I do.
Yeah, that is probably my go-to tool on the workbench more often than not. I use it to always clean my pruners and various things all the time. And that is one item. It doesn't take a great deal of money or investment to put on the workbench or install on the workbench, but it's well worth having. And if you don't have a workbench and you don't have the space for something of the sort, then, you know, if you, most people have a cordless drill or an electric drill, you can buy a wheel, you know, to put into the drill, into the drill and clean your tools with it. So, that's one way to keep the tools clean. And while you're doing that, you got to have files or a grinder. You know, a file or a grinder, a grinding wheel, you know, just, you got to be careful when you're using that because, you know, you don't want to be chewing off too much of it. But if you get those ends of the shovel, you know, if it's a flat shovel or a bullnose shovel that get bent up or damaged, you know, you want to just keep those nice and sharp with a file or a grinding wheel. And just, you know, be careful when you're doing that. So that's one way of sharpening your tools. If you have pruners or various other types of items like that, use a honing stone. Okay, so that's one of the best ways you can do that. And after you clean everything, you know, I use linseed oil. You can use 3-in-1 oil and wipe the metal parts of the tools down with oil. That keeps them from rusting.
Yeah.
And, you'll be glad that you did that. Use WD-40, whatever. And for those, that like wooden handled tools, which I do, and I do this especially on my wheelbarrow, you know, I have the wooden handles is, you know, I'll lightly sand those and, I'll wipe them down with linseed oil. And it's funny, the old boy called me out on that one day at the store, and I looked at him. I said, "What do you mean I don't do that?" I said, "Have you ever been up to my house and washed me clean my tools?" "No." "All right." Yeah. He was calling me out like, "You don't do that." I most certainly do. So there you go, Pop. If he's listening,
yes,
I'll set him straight.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, those are just a couple of tips that you can go about keeping those tools functioning the way that they need to function, and it will make your gardening projects a lot easier. Believe me, it really, really will. And put your tools away. Put your tools up so you know where they are.
Oh, yeah.
I think you struggle
with that. I do.
Don't you?
They're usually always found right where I use them last. You know. Or here's the other thing is I'll be working somewhere and finish, you know, either a blade or a knife or a screw, a driver, and I'll put it within reach of where I am and then finish what I'm doing and walk away. And then months later or days later, I can't find that screwdriver. And then turn right around and go, last time I had it, I was, there it is. Terrible.
I can pretty much tell Tina if I'm at work and she's at home, if I need something.
You're one of those guys.
Yeah.
Walk down and to your left at 3 o'clock.
Yes. And, you know, I have a toolbox that says electrical. I have one on it that says plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
So those items are there, you know, and believe me, it's easier for me to take some of my tools in from home to work than it is to find them at work.
Now, I went through this phase of 5-gallon buckets. I thought 5-gallon buckets were the best thing since sliced bread. I can, you know what? I'll use one of these. I got a couple of those aprons that go in the 5-gallon bucket. Where you can put different tools in them, and then you can put tools in the 5-gallon buckets. And then I throw stuff on top of those things and then set the buckets aside and can never find anything. So now, you know, you were talking about how bad my shed is. I never cleaned it out two or three times.
I know, but I did not say that.
But the garage, too. But while we were working down in the basement over the holiday break, I found 3 of those 5-gallon buckets with all kinds of tools that I had lost. Laying down in the bottom of the bucket. And I'm going, I know why I have 3 sanders.
And you just reminded me of something because you've been doing some drywall work lately.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, when you mix up your mud and all that good stuff and you're taping and whatever, I have to keep those tools clean. And I have a galvanized mud kind of holder.
Yep.
When I'm done, that thing looks like it did when I bought it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I
have a relative that's in the business of, you know, construction remodeling that will not. I mean, I just see that stuff all over, you know, the plus 10 mud and all that stuff, you know, on his tools and everything. I'm like, you got to be kidding.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do people do that?
You know, when they're going to start a project, they have to get it out, clean it off first, and then go
right,
and do it.
Right.
I'm like you. I've got to clean all that
interesting,
up.
Interesting. So that's
except
funny.
When I've been at refreshment and doing a little drywall mudding, then on occasions I'll come down after a break and go, oh, wonder how long that's been laying there.
Yeah, or you don't put the cap back on the or the lid back on the plus 10 bucket or whatever you're looking for. It's like, it looks like a
when we were on vacation, I was doing some of that and, you know, having a little refreshments while I'm working around the house, you know. And then Lisa sent me a message, said, well, I think I'm going to go downstairs and maybe, you know, do a little sanding. And then she, 10, 15 minutes later, I get a text from her. You're not allowed to do any drywall mudding while you're drinking again. It's a mess down there. Big globs all over the floor.
Yeah, that one gets me too. I don't know. I'm not going to go there. I don't want to point fingers at anyone. Yeah. And, you know, on that same note, you were talking about the garden shed. Oh, I'm telling you, you know, keeping that organized.
Mm-hmm.
And you say it all the time, how you clean that out. And what's really important, those who have garden sheds and you leave your chemical products in there, like your herbicides and various things, and as cold as the temperatures have been, I can guarantee you this, they have frozen at some point in time.
Yeah.
That product is not going to be
effective.
Good or effective any longer. So you might as well start pitching that, and when you do so, dispose of that correctly. Get with your local municipality or somebody that will take those products so we can dispose of those the way we need to dispose of those. Do not pour those down a drain. Do not pour those into the soil.
Yeah.
That's not what I'd like to see you do.
Sure. Safety first.
That's right. You know, and this is a good time to get rid of those old paint cans and various things and just stuff that's been sitting around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Clean up. I get into this cleaning mode every time this year, and I am the kind of person I will throw away. It's out. No questions asked. It's out. So one of those good projects to keep in mind. Also, for the avid gardener, and even if you're a novice, this is a time of year that we talk often about seed starting and getting all that stuff and all of your supplies together for this upcoming spring season. One of the best things that you can do is build or construct a cold frame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we did that a couple of years ago, and cold frames are definitely a necessity, especially if you want to get a jump start on the season or if you want to extend the season. And when I say that, cold frames are like a little mini greenhouse. And when we get a jump start on the season, it's because we're putting things in that cold frame earlier than normal because it's like a little mini greenhouse and we can put things kind of outdoors to harden off our seedlings. That's so, so important. And so that's allowing us to get a jump start on a season. In addition to that, it allows us to grow and do things later in the season. And cold frames also are very valuable in a sense that if you want to winter some things over in a cold frame, it almost takes you another zone south.
Mm-hmm.
Every layer you layer something like that, it makes it easier for some plants that are a little more temperamental to get through the winter months. Just for example, a plant that is a little temperamental here, depending upon the winter, I classify it as a tender perennial sometimes, it's an herb, is rosemary. Who doesn't like rosemary?
Mm-hmm.
A wonderful plant, and especially if you like to cook from a culinary standpoint, it's awesome. I would always keep a cold frame over my rosemary plants, and I had one for like 3 or 4 years until my wife pulled it. When I had first met her, she was over at my house. I had given her privilege to go into the house with keys, and I came home one day from work and I smelled this real strong fragrance or aroma of rosemary, and I'm like, what is that? Oh, I went ahead and pulled that plant. You know, it's fall. No. I usually cover it with a cold frame. Right. So that would be a great project to start. You know, cold frames can be various sizes. They can be like 3 foot by 3 foot, 2 by 3 foot, mm-hmm. 4 by 4. And whenever you're driving around on garbage day, pay attention to what's on the curbside.
Yeah.
There's some valuable things sitting right there at the curb next to the trash cans. And if they are old wooden windows,
they're perfect.
Man, those are golden.
And you can still get on our In and Around the House Facebook page and see the video we did a couple of years ago where you and I constructed one of those.
Yeah. So get that set up. Did you pull it up?
I will.
Oh, cool. But that's another project in itself that I think every gardener who, if you're an avid gardener, if you're a novice gardener, it's something worth looking into.
7.9 B105, In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have to pause for a moment. When we come back,
we're going to continue winter projects.
Welcome back, In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Been talking about getting your tools ready and in shape and keeping them in shape and organizing everything to get ready for the season. Because here's what always happens is we talk about being ready. We talk about how quickly it will be here. And then suddenly, bang, it's here.
It's on top of you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we've been talking about some winter gardening projects this morning on today's show, In and Around the House. And Ernie, if you want to keep up with us, what's the best way to do it? Stay with us on our Facebook page. You can certainly email us, too, at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. You can check us out on some of the past shows if you missed one with our podcast.
Uh-huh.
So there's a number of ways to keep in touch with us. You might even find us in one of the high table.
Round table.
That's right. Round table meeting. You never know where we're going to show up. So
yes.
You can always send out that invite to us, too. You never know. But we're talking about various ways or various things that we can do to keep ourselves occupied throughout the winter months. It's really tough, you know, when there's snow outside and the cold temperatures that we've been experiencing prohibit us from doing things outdoors, obviously. But we can still do a lot of planning inside.
Yes.
And planning your vegetable garden. How many people really plan the vegetable garden?
Boy, you know, I know I hate to say the old timers, but generation before us always did it.
And I can
and we talk about this quite often. I remember my mom and dad had the seed starting table down in the basement.
Yep. And, you know, I think it really starts with when you're planting your vegetable garden, it really starts with, we've talked about this many times in past shows, and my friends have really given me a hard time about it. And they look at me like, oh, yeah, you really do that?
Yeah.
But it starts with really keeping notes, a journal. You know, what worked well last year? You know, that's the first thing you really have to ask yourself. What worked well?
Yeah.
And in addition to that, what would you have done differently?
Yeah. Yep. That's a good point.
Yeah. What would you have done differently? You know, it's like when you ask that girl out and I didn't ask her right. I would have done that differently, you know? Same way with gardening, you know? What would you do differently? Mm-hmm. So keeping, you know, good notes or a journal is of the essence. You can always go back, and it's an easy way to, you know, reflect on what was what last year. I forget a lot of times.
No.
You know? And it's crazy. And, you know, like what we bought this past week in the gift market for the upcoming holiday season for 2018, when it starts coming in July and August.
What?
Like, oh, I bought that.
Yeah.
Wow, I forgot. And stuff is coming in now that I bought last July. I bought that. So it's only as good as your note taking is, you know, just like when you're in college. If you take good notes, you'll be a good student. So, you know, this is something else to throw out there, too, is have you ever used graph paper, purchased graph paper? You can buy a pamphlet. It's inexpensive. And you got this grid of graph paper. So measuring your garden beds, and we're going to talk about raised beds, too. This also applies to raised beds. This also applies to your landscape designs, which we're going to talk about. You know, graph paper. It's inexpensive. Pick it up. Know your measurements of the beds you want to work with, what it is that you're doing, and start with graph paper. And each one of those grids, allow each one of those grids to be representative of an area. Could it be a 1 foot square area, a 2 foot square area? So each one of those little square grids on graph paper, allow that to represent a sizable area.
I got a feeling you're going to need a couple of number two pencils, a little slide ruler, a little
protractor.
Protractor, square and compass, and a pocket protector.
And your 11th grade algebra book.
Yeah, I knew by the time I was a freshman I wasn't going to go to algebra.
Quantitative math. Here we go. But start there. Try something different. You know, we're talking about New Year's resolutions when it comes to gardening. Try something different, something you've been wanting to grow that you never grew. One year, for example, what did I grow that was interesting? Kohlrabi. That was cool.
Oh.
What was that? Daggone it. Did it come? Okra.
Okra.
What a cool plant.
Mm-hmm.
And see, you pick the okra off, and if you like pickling, you know, if you go through a jar of pickles or peppers or whatever, keep the brine and just put your okra in there and just let it sit for a couple of days in the refrigerator, and you have pickled okra.
Wow.
I love pickled okra. But it's a beautiful plant, too. So, you know, those are things that I just experimented with, and it's fun to do that. So always try something new. You know, maybe weed more often than what you typically weed.
Mm-hmm.
That's important, too. Had a great, this is another one of our questions. I had this, I think it was Facebook the other day. Somebody had asked me about the effectiveness of like cornmeal or corn gluten,
right?
You know, in the garden, it is corn gluten is an effective pre-emergent that keeps weed seed from germinating. Best suited for a vegetable garden, especially if you want to keep things clean. You certainly don't want to put like Dimension down or Preen down in your garden beds. Yeah. I totally discourage you from doing so. But you know, these are those things. These are those ways to keep in touch with us. So it was on Facebook. Someone had asked about corn gluten, and I responded, yes, it can be effective if and only if you use it often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have that residual effect as some of the synthetic materials that's man-made that we use as a pre-emergent.
Right.
Which you don't want to use those anyway.
No.
So that's a way to keep weeds down in addition to the New Year's resolution. You're going to weed more often.
That's
so,
right. You know, since you're talking about weeds, I told you this earlier, but I wanted to share it with our audience. Uh-huh. Yesterday, you know, when the weather got above freezing, the biggest line was the line at the car wash, either the one that you just sprayed off the car or you wanted to get all that salt washed off.
Yeah.
And Gideon, our 3.5-year-old grandson, wanted to ride up with Papaw to wash Mamaw's truck. It's not Papaw's truck. It's Mamaw's
truck. I knew that wasn't your truck. I'm glad you admitted that.
So I guess he had heard us talking about, you know, a couple of things we're going to do differently in the landscape, the gardening. And he said he could help out. And all we had to do was yell for him and he'd come out and use his big muscles to help us pull the weeds. And a few moments of silence. And then he goes, why do weeds take over? Where do they come from?
Good question.
I had no answer for him. I said, well, they're plants too, and they're trying to survive along with all the other plants. Why do they take over? So I'll tell him I'm going to bring him down to Jackson to let you explain that.
There you go. That's a great question. You know, and really, that is, I'm glad you led into that little story.
Yeah.
He's the one that brought the little wagon in.
His garden. Yeah.
All right. Cute kid. You got to like that.
Yeah.
But that was part of, you know, planning your vegetable garden or whatever type of garden.
Yeah.
You know, it was introducing your kids or grandchildren to gardening and take them to the garden center with you. So, you know, these are things that that are so important is getting kids involved. I'm really concerned and I get worried that, you know, we're forgetting about the basics and introducing kids to what's necessary and essential to, and the easiest of the easy to grow various things in the garden and have those for our own personal consumption. And what a way to introduce a kid, a child, like I said, or a grandchild to, you know, planting bulbs in the fall. And then they get to see the end result in the spring when the tulips come up and are in full bloom or introducing them to seed starting. And seeing that tomato plant start from seed and come up and then plant it out, transplant it out into the garden, and then you get to pick tomatoes later in the season. Kids enjoy that. They remember that.
Oh, yeah.
I can remember as a youngster in my second grade class at 9th District School, Miss Treadway, we would sprout bean seeds on damp sponges over next to them. Yeah, it was the coolest thing how that all worked.
Yeah.
You know, you remember those things, and that's what's important. Instilling those good gardening ideas and traits with the youngsters, please think about that. Take them to the garden centers. So important.
Yeah.
You know, and also, you know, think about this. This is a great New Year's resolution for the gardener. And we talk about these products all the time. You know, what can you do, or how can you plan out a garden where you might use less chemicals? That's really, really important. How can you plan out or work a garden where you introduce and bring in more pollinators? That's important.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things that we can jot down on paper. We can discuss with the little ones here during the winter months and just start getting these projects in line.
Sure.
And take it forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Lisa was kind of looking ahead because he does, every time he comes over to the house, he's got to be outside with Mamaw and helping around the yard. So she got him a little gardening kit with a little rake, a little shovel, and a little hand tool and gloves, the whole nine yard. And he's all excited. Can't wait to get out there and do all that.
It's awesome. You know, they make gardening gloves and gardening tools for little kids. I'm ashamed to say this. We don't sell those, but they're available. And, you know, when the little ones have their own tools, they feel big. Right?
Yeah. But he did say, you know, in the same ride, was it, I was really hoping to get a saw so I could cut down trees. Well, we got to work on that part, Gideon.
You know what? Get him that log splitter for Christmas. You've been wanting a log splitter,
that's what
right?
You should do.
There you go.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. That'd be funny.
Oh,
hey,
yeah.
Mamaw, guess what we got Gideon for Christmas? A log splitter.
There you go.
And we got to pause.
That's one of those practical gifts right there.
When we come back.
You know, we're going to conclude some of the winter gardening project ideas, and then when we come back, and then when we turn the corner, stay with us because I'm going to talk about some of the trends, too, for the 2018 season. So hang in there with us. Give us a shout-out if you like, 749-B105. Ernie and I will be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And earlier in the show, we were talking about building a coal frame. We went back into our archives, which, as we mentioned, a great way to stay connected with us is in and around the house Facebook page. And we grabbed the video we shot down at Jackson Florist and Garden Center about building one and reposted it so you could view that, give you a couple of ideas. That's a wonderful little project you could tackle in the next couple of weeks and be ready.
Absolutely. So definitely it's, if you're an avid gardener and you like the, you know, vegetable garden, boy, that's a must have.
Yeah.
It really, really is. You know, on to a couple other projects real quick, and we'll sum it up in this little segment here with my project list for the winter. You know, I say this often. I think you've talked about this a little bit yourself, wanting to do this. Raised beds are really an excellent way of gardening. It can be, you know, it could be for flowers, it could be for herbs, it could be for vegetables. And you really, if you're having a difficult start with various plants and so forth, just planting in the ground like we normally would, constructing some raised beds will really make that whole gardening experience totally, totally different. And really one of the key benefits to raised beds is this, is that you get to start with your own soil mix. And you typically, you know, when you're doing raised beds, you want those to be at least 6 to 8 inches, maybe 10 inches deep. It's totally up to you. There are some people that make them a couple of feet. It varies to where they don't have to bend over and garden.
I like that.
Yeah. So that makes it a little easier on the old back. That's for sure. But make or construct your raised beds in such a way that you can, like, put them in sequence from one another, two or three or four, and leave rows in between those. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, starting with various types of compost or peat moss and different soil amendments, it just gives you that flexibility to plant a lot of things, and you're going to be a lot more successful gardening that way than you'll ever, ever imagine. The only true con versus the pro issues or things about raised beds is it's an expense up front. You know, it does cost to bring some of these materials in. And you can buy these kits that are really easy to put together, too. at your local garden centers and nurseries. But refrain from, this is what I, and you can do a raised bed from most anything. Refrain from, do not, I do not encourage you to use treated lumber. You know, just do not risk anything leaching into the soil that can be absorbed into the plant through its root structure. You know, look for things that you could do cinder blocks if you want. You could do, like, use cedar wood or just use plain, you know, pine.
Yeah.
Over time, you might have to replace those, but you'll be glad that you did.
Sure.
So there's a lot of benefits to constructing raised beds. And you just the harvest, what you reap, is a lot better than what it typically is in the ground. I hate to say that, but that's been my experience. So, you know, think about that type of a project. Map it out. And certainly that will be fun to set up and design throughout the winter months. So I encourage you to do that. And last but not least, this is really, really important. You know, going back to the graph paper, if you need to design a new landscape, you know, there's a lot of home construction taking place now, and the economy starting to become in such a way that's robust. People are starting to build homes again, and everyone's excited about that. And if you want to design your own landscape, there's nothing more gratifying than doing so. If you're that type of DIY person, you know, doing it yourself.
Is that what that stands
that's
for?
That's what that stands for. You know, it's a good old term. I wish I would have coined it, but I did not. Certainly, you know, start taking, you know, the time to lay that out. Mm-hmm. If you need to redesign an old garden bed or an existing bed, now's the perfect time to do it. You know, if you want somebody to do it, like Bob Bard or the folks out there at Baton's or up there at Lakeview or out there, Scott Maddox at Maddox Garden Center, if you're looking for somebody to do some landscape installs for you, get with them. Now's the time to plan it out. Take photographs of the layout of your home. Know the positioning of your home. What direction does the front of your house face?
Mm.
I was telling you earlier in the program today, mine's north. Right. You know, that's so important. Get those measurements of those beds. That's so important. Because when it comes to plant selection and putting the right plant in the right place, we need to know what type of space constraints we have. You know, and getting that graph paper out and allowing those little squares on that graph sheet to represent a specified area, 1 square foot area, 2 square foot area. You can draw things out and you can position various types of shrubs and trees and perennials on that graph paper in relation to what their average growth habits are like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the heights, the widths. You certainly do not want to plant the wrong plant in the wrong place, because before you know it, you're lifting those items out.
Mm-hmm.
You've just spent money for no reason at all. And this happens when you're trying to get that instant look.
Yeah.
Allow plants to grow and get adapted and acclimated to its growing environment. You'll be glad that you did that. Give plants plenty of room. So when you draw this out and design this, that's why that's so important. And do a little bit of homework, you know. What type of plants do you want? Do you need something that's, you know, more long using and working with evergreens? Do you want evergreens that are more upright and pyramidal in shape? Do you want evergreens that are more rounded in habit, that stay low, or free forming? You know, there's various things you need to take into consideration. What type of shrubbery are you looking for? Do you want something that gives you winter interest? Do you want something that gives you blooms? Do you want something that gives you A through Z, winter interest, good blooms, fall color? So there's various things you need to take into consideration. So now is the time to do it. Get with your local landscaper, plan this out, because I guarantee you, Ernie, when we hit March and April, when the weather warms up, especially coming out of the winter we've been experiencing thus far, people are going to be chomping at the bit.
Oh,
they're going to be ready to go, and you're going to be last in line. You're going to be that person way in the back going through TSA check. Okay? Yeah. That's what it is.
And when then you hear the plane is boarding.
Yeah, the plane is boarding. So these are projects that you need to get into and take a serious look at. And most importantly, please, you know, support your local garden centers and nurseries. I'm not begging you to do so, but what's so important here is that you're going to get quality plants from your local garden center and nursery, mm-hmm. and you're going to get, most importantly, the best advice. And that's, you want to do this one time. And supporting local businesses, 67 cents of every dollar that you spend stays local. So support local businesses all throughout, not just garden centers and nurseries and florists, but other small local businesses as well.
Bakeries,
there you go. You read my mind.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden. You guys have to pause for a moment. When we come back,
less is more, and let's get into some of the 2018 gardening trends. This is going to be fun.